Good morning and welcome to episode 135.5 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. This is an extra little podcast, and if you're here looking for basketball, I would say stop the episode right now. Wanted to actually get a couple of the interviews that I was able to do at the baseball spring training, so up for the listeners. And so if you are not interested in baseball at all, I would say go ahead and just shut this off and wait for the next episode, which will be out in a couple of days. If you are interested in baseball or just want to hear some interviews with some baseball players, keep on listening. So this, like I said, it's an extra one, and it's basically when I was doing my trip out in the West Coast of the United States. I was had the fortunate opportunity to head out to the spring training of the Cubs. Well, a couple of teams, and had a chance to do a couple of interviews. I really want to thank Jim Capel from ESPN, who helped me get into a couple of games. I got to see the Cubs play against the Oakland A's at Hohokam Park. Unfortunately, didn't get to see, I believe it's called Sloan Park, the Cubs' new facility, which is supposed to be absolutely amazing. But did get a chance to see the Cubs nonetheless. Got to see Chris Bryant hit a home run, which was always fun. before the game, there was Joe Maddon, the new manager, had a media availability in the dugout. And so I was able to jet down and take part in that. And that'll be the first interview you hear. So that was basically with a bunch of the Cub beat reporters. The second interview came on the second day I was over there, and I went over to see the Angels and Cleveland play, and had a chance to talk to Albert Pujols. So that's the second interview that I have with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So I had a chance to talk to him. And then the final interview is with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim hitting coach, Don Baylor. You know, as big as a basketball fan I am, and I think people who listen to the show know this, I am 10 times more a baseball fan, so this was pretty fun for me. Don't have a chance to really see too much high-level baseball. And, okay, the baseball, it was third week of March, so it wasn't the highest of level, but it was still professional baseball, and so it was pretty exciting. And it was fun just to talk baseball with the reporters, talk baseball, obviously, with the players. I asked the guys, the listeners on Facebook, if you wanted to hear the interviews. So, and there was a resounding yes. So here are the interviews. Again, like I said, in the order of Joe Maddon, the new Cubs manager, and that will be followed up by my interview. And that's not an interview. That's just the chat we had with the beat reporters in the dugout before the game. But then after that are my two chats with Albert Pujols and Don Baylor, both of the Angels. So enjoy, and we'll catch you on the other side of those interviews.
2005. The clubhouses were pretty much the same as they are right now. Overall, the feel's the same, except they've added this little overhang, which is nice. The grandstand look. A lot of it looks the same, but it's but also quite an improvement too. Good for them. Yeah, great scoreboard. Absolutely. So they did a great job. I like it.
With Lester, is he going to throw a B game or a regular game?
B game. He's not B game, like a minor league game kind of a thing. Okay. We want to be able to control the number of pitches. And for instance, if he's having a long inning, just flip it over to get to the into the dugout that the other team play. So it's just more of a controlled environment. That's all we're working from right now. He's fine. We want to be able to control it.
will he be able to, I think, 60 pitches on Thursday and maybe 80 in his last start? Is that enough for him to open the season?
Yeah, that would be fine for me. Yes, I mean, that would depend on how pitchy-fishy he would be regarding going how deep into the first game. But, yeah, if you go 80, you know, theoretically you'd like to be able to at least be like in the mid-90s or 100 before that first game. He might be somewhat restricted in regarding length in that first game, but if he gets somewhere in that, he already pitched 70. He did 70 prior to moving him back. So he's already been as high as 70. And I haven't spoken with Boss specifically about the number for this next one, except that we wanted to be able to control the rapidity, the amount, and all that kind of stuff. So
he's almost around 60.
That probably about right.
Same plan in minor league game next week, not Cactus League game, so you can
control it again. As of right now, yeah, we just want to be able to control what he's doing, and I'm not concerned who he pitches against. Just needs somebody standing up there so that he gets the requisite number of pitches thrown and that he feels good. He says, I feel good. Excuse me, if he says he feels good, I feel good.
Castro said he was okay if you wanted to wait another day.
Yeah, one more day. Normally, when a guy says he feels better, you give him one more day, so he'll play tomorrow.
You said you had some creative talks with Theo and Jed about the Jackson Wood thing. At what point would you be able to share some of those ideas?
Probably right down to the very end, honest, just being honest, like that last week, just to see if it all works out that way or not. Mm-hmm. And that's just straight up. I mean, there's if it plays out in a certain way, there'd be maybe a creative nature to that pairing. But we'll see. We still got how many days? 2 weeks almost? 12 days. So, you know, about that last five to seven days, we got to know exactly what you're doing. Sharp. I mean, I've only seen him a couple times. The guy, just like you've heard, if I've heard, is that he just knows what he's doing. He does. I don't even worry about a gun reading with this guy. It would just be a matter of him hitting his spots. Everything was going on. Everything was going on. Location, break, velocity, movement. He actually had a good swing at the plate also. He got hit with the comebacker off the leg a little bit, but he's fine. He looked really good.
Trimble hit pretty hard.
Yeah. I thought he hit his glove by his reaction, but I saw him before he came out. He said he was fine.
Joe, when you're trying to change a culture, what is the biggest, most important thing?
Trust. And that would be, I've already talked about it, the players have my trust already. I have to earn theirs. And once you have trust going flowing back and forth, then you could have that, I like to use the term constructive criticism. Until somebody would trust me or us as a coaching staff, they're always going to push back on suggestions, always. And when that happens, you don't have that real good flow or that there's a belief system working both ways. It's hard to really get to where you want to go. So we've been really strongly in the relationship building phase. I think the trust is growing right now. And then as soon as you get to that comfortable moment where I could tell you what I think you're doing wrong without holding back, and I know that you're going to accept it or at least listen to me, we're in a pretty good spot.
Brian's working the outfield. Is that just introductory work today?
Yeah, he's going to play within the next couple of days. We're going to try to get him into a game as an outfielder.
But today was just
get him back out there, reacquainted. He knows how to do it, but just a reacquaintance situation before you actually throw him out there.
How did he look at, you know, as far as his movements?
I didn't see it. Davey did. I didn't see it.
The other day, you brought up Freakonomics, and you were talking about things that people aren't talking about. But can you explain what you meant by that? Is that us?
I think in general terms, I mean, let me just go generally speaking, you know, fans are always going to evaluate position players by their batting average. They don't even care about their defense. They don't care how well they run the bases. They don't care about arm strength. They don't care about any of that stuff. And so when it comes down to evaluation at this time of the year, I think for the most part, very superficially, people go right to a batting average. And you can't do that. I mean, you can, but if you're going to be successful, you cannot. You look at a pitcher, say some of our guys are maybe not throwing the ball as well as they possibly can right now, but I know they're healthy. I know their track record is. So I can look at say it's like a duck on top of the water, it looks smooth on the top. It can be very difficult underneath, or vice versa. guys are. So with our guys, I'm just looking at tried and true's part of it. The other part of it is if you just want to look at the numbers that were on the back of baseball cards for the last 50 years, you're going to be misled sometimes.
Is that like Rizzo's head?
I have no idea. I have no idea what he's doing right now.
He's good at that.
Yeah, and I have no. I mean, exactly. It's a great illustration. And of course, you talk about Baez striking out. I might be the only guy sitting around here to tell you. I'm really not concerned with that right now.
Even with some of those swings.
Yeah. The swing has nothing to do with it for me. That's the obvious surface layer kind of stuff. That's the part that's going to change. But if you break him down in other components of his game, he's one of the best young players I've seen, period.
Yeah, it sounds like we're talking about some inflammation asymmetry here, if I read my Freakonomics correctly.
Well, no, yeah, it's he's only being judged from the outside by his swings. That's it.
What's the best
thing about the rest of his game? What have you seen otherwise?
That creates a record strikeout pace, fewer balls in play, a horrible batting average. No batting average. Horrible on-base percentage, and a lower frequency of home runs.
And I think all that will switch, but that's the pitchers what they think about when he's playing defense. How about the runs that you save? I mean, that's the part in today's game. I've come from the land of run prevention, too, and that's a part of my evaluation process. And a guy like that, I think part of when he finally arrives consistently, I think there's going to be that exhale that's going to permit him to become a better offensive player relatively fast. I know what you're saying. I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from. But, I mean, this guy's also had some really brilliant minor league seasons as a hitter, too. Outside of, I mean, look at Timmy Sam. I talk about Fish. Fish, when he was in his junior year in AA, the first half of the season, he struck out 100 times. By the second half, he struck out 166, but he walked 90 times. Now, I know Javi doesn't walk enough yet, but my point is, all that stuff can be changed very quickly with, it's more of a thought, a mental adjustment than a physical adjustment for me. So if we could get him to think possibly a little bit differently, more than just worry about the swing issues, I think you're going to see better results quickly.
Well, as a manager, you consider yourself the most important player development guy as well, right? I mean, because
I can't help it. Yeah, I've been that guy, and you know, it'd be nice to get a bunch of like 25 finished products. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. I am not opposed to trying to take somebody that's a little bit unpolished and help him get to that final level. Been involved in that a lot. So I think that is part of the process here, the way Major League Baseball's played right now. And as a staff, again, that's part of your job, is to take this kind of a guy and get it to that next level. Of course, it's always incumbent upon the player, always. But from a staff's perspective, what we do and how we relay information to him can help expedite the situation. It's about how you deliver the message a lot, too, that matters. I find that kind of a player very exciting.
You know, the Rays just announced they're going to retire Sims' number.
Cool. Which number are they retiring?
66.
Okay. I think it's great. I mean, I think it's great. Listen, I missed him a lot last year. It's too bad that guy, meaning the former Major League player that's up in years a little bit, could not be a more pertinent part of a lot more Major League teams. Although Zim was unique. I mean, I'm saying I'd like to see more of that. Zim was unique in the sense that Zim could evaluate players, talk about strategy, and still be 80 years old. That doesn't happen very often anymore. So if he was invaluable to me personally, he was a great asset for me. That whole organization, all those players and coaches benefited from his presence. And I know him and Stu are very tight also. So I think it's a great move. I just was curious about the number 23, okay. I mean, his number was 23.
Is there anything or anyone that has surprised you so far with 2 weeks to go to opening day? Not even 2 weeks.
Surprised me? I think Junior Lake's had a really good camp. Nothing is surprising since I had heard different things about his at-bats, and I think he's done a nice job of adjusting at the plate, working better at-bats. So that's been kind of nice to watch. Getting a chance to see Baez play shortstop, I had heard about it. You saw the throw he made from the hole the other day, that was really good. Wellington Castillo, hearing about that and then watching him play on a consistent basis. I heard he was good. I thought he was good. He's really good from what I'm seeing as an example. And then Kyle Hendricks. I didn't, you know, you hear about it. I never really saw him play before. Not like it's a huge surprise, but then you actually, you know, you're sitting in the meetings, you hear the reports, you hear guys, you know, verbalize about somebody, then you actually see it. It's pretty good.
If Baez makes your team, is he your backup shortstop automatically?
Of course. I mean, he would be a backup shortstop, yes.
What's the thing that Javi's doing right now that you're really happy with?
He's playing the game well. Playing the game real well. He's a good baseball player. He's a great base runner. He's a very good defender. Got a great arm. And I still believe every time he swings the bat, the ball has a chance to go over the wall. I think as he gains more experience here, he'll start making those adjustments. He's a tough guy, man. He's fought through different forms of adversity, both personally and in a baseball sense. I don't know. I've not been around him a lot, but I haven't seen him cave. I haven't seen him woe is me. I have not heard one excuse out of his mouth, which I also love. There's a high level of accountability there from what I can gather, too. So, again, I mean, I know I've not been here long enough to really be frustrated by anything. But as a scout walking the door a couple weeks ago, saw him for two games or three games in Puerto Rico, and I've seen him maybe 10 games here. If I'm a scout, how old is he, 21? 22.
Just 22.
He's a first-round draft choice. He's like way up at the top, but the difference is he'd be starting in Double-A. That has a chance of starting the big leagues at that same age. So he's really an interesting baseball player.
How much different is he than he was in Puerto Rico?
I don't know. I'm just watching. I mean, I saw him play really good defense down there. I saw him turn some double plays. Saw him make some really good base running decisions. Offensively, I think I saw him strike out once in two or three, whatever, two games. I saw two games, right? I saw him strike out once, and hit a double down the left field line, base hit up the middle with two outs, starts a rally, and then he had another line drive to right center that the guy ran down. I saw him have like three or four good at-bats out of eight.
It's tomorrow, cut down day.
Tomorrow is
the night game on
with
Wednesday.
This, Wednesday. We're going to talk tomorrow. We'll talk.
Then it's likely, or would it go the next day?
It probably, whatever we decide tomorrow, probably is going to filter in the next day. I don't know that for sure, though. It may or may not.
Joe, I'm just around the 95 replacement spring. What was that like as a coach dealing with?
Personally? Yeah. Personally, that was my first year coordinating a major league spring training. So it was great. Seriously, it was great. I had this dry run. You know, I'm just being selfish when I'm talking about me. So those guys were here. How long did it last? It was like 2 or 3 weeks, wasn't it?
No, it was like six weeks.
Okay, shit. Okay, so I did that first and then settled. Then I have to do another spring training. So it was a great, I mean, not that I had not coordinated before, but I had to coordinate a major league camp. So it was a great dry run for me. Beyond that, the obvious dramatic difference between an everyday major league player and a guy that could possibly play once every 3 weeks or not at all at a major league level.
Was there much tension with between the minor leagues and the major leagues?
Or? Some guys. I mean, there was always the hardline union dudes that would came before that were there when all this stuff was set up originally. So there was some volatile, vitriolic kind of guys, and other guys were kind of more passive about it. I was so new to the moment, I was just trying to organize spring training, that was it. But I heard all the conversations, I didn't quite understand it at the time. As I've been here longer, I could understand why. I think Sparky was going to sit out.
Yep.
If there was going to be replacement players playing, I could respect and understand that better now than I could have at that moment.
Free agent camp after the, and also Melbourne was at the free agent camp. Players who weren't signed after the strike settled.
Yeah, again, I mean, and then you have to always realize people got to feed their families too. So it's a real tough moment.
Gallego says that he stocked the shelves at Walmart during the strike.
Yeah, I mean, it's. You know, I think it depends on where you came from, how you were raised, and who your influences as a kid. I think if your dad was probably union, you probably would not dare do something like that. If your dad wasn't, if you didn't have a strong male influence in your life, maybe you could have chosen a different route and felt good about it. Again, that's just a personal decision, man. And I respected both sides, because if you had kids, man, that's one thing. And if you didn't have kids, it could have been something else. Like I said, though, if your daddy was a union dude, I know for sure you weren't crossing that line.
How has the media presence differed here with the Cubs than with the Rays?
Just more of them. But otherwise, I feel like I'm pretty much doing my same thing. I don't feel any differently. I don't feel any differently at all. I kind of, you guys know, I kind of enjoy this. I think Gordon brought up a couple good points a minute or two ago, and I like that shit. Excuse me. I like that stuff. Where,
sorry. Yeah.
No, I do. Listen. See, the thing is,
TK never.
I really always listen to what the questions are, because sometimes you may overlook some stuff. And so if a question pops that makes me think, it makes me possibly reevaluate what I'm doing, I'm fine with that. I'm really good. I don't mind being second-guessed or whatever you want to call it at all, because I promise you I'm going to have a good reason why I did whatever I did, and I feel strongly about it. So there's just more press, obviously, more numbers, larger fan base for sure. But I kind of like all that stuff. So to this point, it's been okay.
So do you have a report from the Deutsche Press Agency?
Really?
Yeah.
From where?
I live in Germany. I'm from Chicago, though. So.
Okay, but I do clinics in Regensburg.
That's where I live.
Okay, I've actually been to the ballpark there.
Yeah.
I've done clinics
Arena
in
Wolf,
Darmstadt. At the Lufthansa training center.
Yeah.
I was very big in Germany. The only regret I have is I did not have like a Porsche to drive on the freeways there.
there you go.
And just stay in the left lane and go.
There you go. And you put your blinker on.
You do.
You flash your lights.
If you're slow, you get to the right lane.
Of course.
Unlike in Arizona. My God. Oh, my God.
How much are you looking?
I think there should be a fine for not driving fast enough. I think you should be like, 55 in this lane, and if you're... And then 65, and then like maybe 75. And if you're below those numbers, get to your fucking right lane.
The middle lane is usually the fastest, because
that's because they're unsure. They're very unsure. They want to be able to go both ways. You can't have it that way. Pick a freaking lane. Pick a lane.
How much are you looking forward to going to Chicago?
I am. As a visitor for years, I really enjoyed going there. Who doesn't? I've never, ever heard anyone utter the phrase, God, I really don't like Chicago. Chicago sucks. I've never heard that. I mean, Chicago is one of the most desirable places in the world to live, not just in the United States. You got this urban, eclectic situation that, and you got your own ocean on top of that in the middle of the country. So, I mean, what's there not to like? Culinary, cultural, history, and on and on. I mean, and then you got Wrigley Field on top of that. So what is there not to like?
You have some sights set that you already want to take in that you weren't able to do on a road trip or whatever?
Not really. I just want to be able to drive my my Chevelle freely with the top down in the summer. That's probably my I got a 72 Chevelle. I'm getting tricked out into it's going to be the Cubmobile by the time I get it up there. It's really Cub colors. I just got some updated photos. That's unbelievable.
Is that the brown one?
No. This is Cub blue with the white Chevelle stripes with white interior with red inlays in the seats with a red carpeted trunk with the 1908 logo in it. It's just a Cubmobile.
And where is that? Is it here?
It's in Florida being done. It's being done.
Okay.
I don't need it yet because the weather's not going to be appropriate.
You don't need it until June.
Yeah, I said May. So that's... I'm looking forward top down, shifting gears, driving to Chicago, stereo blasting after a win. That's my ultimate moment right there.
These guys will have more chance to talk to you, but what do you have to do? What do you want to do the next 2 weeks or so with this team to have them ready to start the season?
Really galvanize the fact that we're a team and really promote the concept that we're a team and that we're not going anywhere unless we all believe in the same thing. And so the next 2 weeks will be totally devoted to concepts, fundamentalism, and the belief that we are a team. And if we walk into the clubhouse egoless on a daily basis, we could do some really loud things this summer.
And are the young kids? All right. Let's just start off really quick. How you feel a couple weeks from the start of the season? How anxious are you looking forward to starting it all up?
Oh, I'm not anxious about anything. The day, just waiting for the day to come, and that's it. But I feel pretty good, and you know, just getting myself ready for the season, and that's my goal.
How's this spring training changed as compared to other spring trainings that you've been to?
I think it's the same thing. I had to come in here, try to stay healthy, do the work that I have to do, and try to prepare myself for the season, and that's all you can do, you know. Get all that soreness away and try to break camp healthy. That's everybody's main goal here, and get ready for the season.
Is there, besides staying healthy, is there anything that you're working on that you'd like to, that you kind of thought about in the offseason that you kind of came to spring training thinking that you wanted to do?
Not really. Those are things that I do in the offseason, but whenever I'm here, I do the things that I need to do, which is my preparation in the cage and my preparation, you know, and then when I take batting practice, and they just take it what they give to the game and apply and hopefully, you know, happen in the game. But, you know, in spring training, you know, I know sometimes people think that it's so long, but sometimes we need those times, you know, to get ourselves, you know, to get that soreness away and to prepare ourselves for a regular season.
How do you think your leadership role, your thoughts in general, what kind of leadership role do you want to take over or change at all?
You know what? I think we all are a leader here. I think we all know what we need to do. There's nobody that needs to be babysitting here. You're dealing with grown men here, and I think my job is to try to do whatever I had to do to help young players out, just the same way the others did to me. So that's pretty much it.
There's a lot of young players coming up, more and more. What do you think about that? You've been around the game a while. When the young players come up, what do you see in them that is maybe different than the young players that you know when you were and coming up?
I don't know. I think more talent, the ability and the talent, and you know, bigger guys and just power arms. You know, the back when I came up, you know, you don't see that many power arms. A lot of injuries too. So I don't know if it's because the low work that they put in the minor league or in college or high school, whatever it is. But those are things that I see different.
Talent level as well. I mean, you said they're highly talented. Why do you think that is? Is it because they're working more on their game, or how can you explain that?
Well, if I was a genius, I can let you know, but I'm not, so I can't tell you in there why they have so much talent right now. You know, just the way that they've been blessed, you know, by God, and that's something, you know, that's hard to describe.
I was over at Cubs camp yesterday and saw Brian hit home run. You know, there's Lindor, who's going to be playing today. Who are some of the young guys, maybe not yet there, that even you've heard about and are kind of looking forward to seeing?
I have one here, Mike Trout.
So I was going to come to him.
We're up inside every day to see him play, so that's pretty much it. You know, he's a pretty special player. So I haven't seen too many guys, because when you're here in spring training, you only see a guy one or bat. It's hard for you to try to pick one guy, you know. But when you play with a guy with the caliber of Mike Trout, it's pretty special. You know, you don't see that every year. You know, it's every 50 years something like that happen.
How do you see he's changed now? He's by far from a veteran, but you know, he's had a couple of years now. How do you see he's changed, even coming into this camp compared to camps in the past?
He hasn't changed. He's been the same Mike Trout that I know. So I think he needs to stay like that, and he needs to just be himself and prepare himself for the season. So, and I think that's the main thing, that for the success that he had as a young player like that, and just being the same humble and being hungry. I think that's what you want for a player every year.
I'll let you go with that.
All right.
Thanks, man. I'm Dylan. Another year, another camp. How ready you guys feel less than 2 weeks before the start of the season?
The starters, the hitters had a lot of good at-bats this spring. You win 98 games, you think guys are kind of going to sit back and kind of take it easy, but they haven't. Came here in great shape. Their mental approach to the game is real good, because there's some guys that are ready about 8 or 9 days ago, ready to play start the season. I know I played with Rod Carew. He was ready in 2 weeks. You know,
how long did it take you?
Long time.
Yeah.
All of April. You know, but there's some guys that they come in and they do their work in the morning. They have a routine. They haven't backed off on that routine. So that's why guys are ready to play.
What's the last thing that you need to get ready? Like you said, Carew takes, you know, whatever, 2 weeks. What's that last thing that needs to be there?
A real game all of a sudden. In Seattle, where you really counts, you know, your adrenaline's higher, your concentration is more. Mm. So that kicks in right away when guys try to get you out for real.
You know,
it's a little different in spring training. You know, you play a lot of day games, and you get back to your routine where open the season. Then all of a sudden you play night games and things. But guys are ready to play.
Is there any sort of different approach you guys are thinking about doing this year in general? Not to give trade secrets away, obviously.
Well, you always want to get off to a good start. That's the main thing. In April, you always want to get to a good start. We got rolling June, July. You know, we just start winning a lot of games. But get off to a good start where people have to come and catch you. You know, you have some guys that played here last year. They know kind of what happened to us at the end of the season. You lose 5 out of 6, and we didn't have that momentum going into the playoffs. That hurt, you know. So guys don't want to repeat that.
You've been around a lot of great hitters in your days, besides being a great hitter yourself. There's a couple of great ones on this team. It's your second year now with them. What's it like being with a guy like Eric, Albert, and start with Albert first, and just the consistency that he's had?
Oh, it's phenomenal, you know, to be so far down the road with him. I watched him, his rookie year in St. Louis, and you know, so I knew him from the National League, and he hasn't really changed a whole lot. You know,
it was a testament to him, right?
Yeah, you know, when you have 500 homers, 1,500 RBIs, you know, he doesn't strike out a lot for a home run hitter. You know, when you talk about home run hitters, you know, you talk about a lot of guys, and Reggie Jackson, the Mantles, and all those guys. They struck out a lot. You know, Albert strikes out 60 times a year, you know, and still hits his homers, you know. And so he puts the ball in play. When he does that, he gets RBI. So that's going to be Mike's thing this year, you know. Like, he struck out 180 times. He's not a 180 strikeout guy, you know. And he knows that. And being around Albert, he's going to understand that.
How do you think he took last year, knowing that there was the batting struggles that he had, at least parts of the season, and like you said, the strikeouts? How do you see that sort of a mind frame? He's maybe in a little different mind frame coming here now. This is your second year with him.
Well, he won an MVP with it, so that was a good thing, you know. So he impressed a lot of people in the league that he was the best player, you know. And he cuts down on his strikeouts. He's going to lead the league in hitting, you know, because he's going to get a lot of infield hits, puts the ball in play. You know, if he struck out 80 times a year, guess what he would hit? You know, it would be just phenomenal, you know. And so being around Albert and his thinking, how he shortens up, hits the ball the other way, takes the RBI. So you learn from guys like that. You know, when you have two players of that caliber, I played with two of the best, the Robinson guys, you know, and they got along great. You know, they were great teammates and things. So a lot of young guys learn from them. You know, a lot of guys would go to them for advice all the time, and that's how it is in this clubhouse. You know, they're not afraid to walk up to the superstar with Albert.
There's a guy on the opposite field today, Lindor. I was at Cubs yesterday to see Bryant. What do you think about some of these young players who are coming up in general, about maybe the level that they're at? Is it, do you sense it that it's a higher level earlier at all, or what do you think about younger players?
Well, there's some the influx of young players kind of reminds me of the 70s, where you had a whole bunch of influx of young players that can make a difference, hopefully, to to the club and to the organization, and it gives a lot of hope to all the other guys that are playing double-A, triple-A, that they might get an opportunity to play in the big leagues. And you have to perform, you know. It's not go up for 2 weeks and struggle and get sent back down.
Come up and stay up.
Mm-hmm.
I work internationally, so just thoughts about the you know, you have Dominicans, there's a lot of Venezuelans and you know, Puerto Ricans, a couple more Asians now, you know, obviously the Cubans are coming. What do you think about the game in general? Do you see a country maybe you know, maybe address Cuba, you know, that more people are going to be coming over? What do you think about sort of the international scope of the game?
Well, I think there's still, we're losing a lot of kids in the U.S. that are playing other sports besides baseball. You know, that's my biggest fear, you know. Because when I first started, Cuban players, I played with you know, Mike Cuellar was a Cuban player, Tony Perez, I mean.
Concepcion.
And it wasn't that many,
right.
You know, but now, you know, they're going back to, you know, Cuba. It was, you know, you go young player and play in Puerto Rico. Now, Puerto Rican guys are not playing baseball anymore, you know. And so over the last 40 years, I mean, be just, you know, the Alomars and all those guys that came through there, Puerto Rico, Ivan Rodriguez, and, you know, it's just not happening anymore. So you're seeing less and less of closer to the United States.
You know, baseball being played.
You're seeing more Japanese guys. You know, all of a sudden, you know, Tanaka might be the opening day pitcher for the Yankees, you know.
Yeah.
So that'd be a first, I think. Yeah. You know, when Nomo came over, you know, so international thing is good. You know, it's when they play the games all the time. Guys with the best fundamentals so far has been the Japanese, the Dominicans have done well in World Baseball Classic, you know, and things like that. So we've kind of gotten away from that. So.
Last question, and I know you might be thinking about it in general, but you mentioned that less players in, you know, an American that playing baseball. How can that change?
Well, we used to be four sport guys, but now they tell you when you're 6 years old, you're going to play baseball, and that's all you're going to play. You're going to play basketball, and that's all you're going to play. You know, the guys that played. During my time, we played baseball, played football. Last game you play on Friday. Monday, you had to be at basketball practice. You know.
Track is maybe in there too and stuff.
You know, and yeah. So you find athletes, you know. And so that's definitely has changed, you know. And sometimes guys just kind of get burnt out on just playing one thing. You know, 70 games, and most games I've played in high school is 25. 25.
Wow. Yeah, that's changed a lot.
Yeah, that's changed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, guys, you go play your first year in rookie ball, you play 80 games, you know, and that's a stretch. And the next year you play 140,
right.
You know, and all of a sudden you're on a track playing 160, so, mm-hmm. You know.
Do you think that, this is then the last question, do you think that if less people, fewer player people, athletes go play football, knowing that there's higher injury concern or whatever, that might lead to an influx of athletes coming to baseball?
I just think now there's no 300 pounders when we play.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You would consider overweight if you were 300, you know. Boog Powell was playing first base at 250, and Weaver was always on him to be under 250, you know. And you know, you have maybe a third baseman in Arizona, he's going to be 260, 275, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the game has, you know, changed in what they expect players to do.
All right.
Okay, so those were the interviews. Good stuff. Like I said, you know, it was just fun talk, being able to talk baseball a little bit different from what I usually do. Would have liked to have actually talked to Chris Bryant or Mike Trout. Just didn't work out, but you know, definitely happy with the amount of interviews, the amount of chat that I was able to put together. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I did. So I guess one last thing I will let you know. The song you're hearing, it's called Keg Baseball, and it's by Sense, and it's from the album Get Dusted, Illness from the Dusted Wax Stacks. And that, of course, is available on freemusicarchive.org. So we'll talk to you again in a couple days. Once again, talking hoops. So hope you enjoyed this little foray into the baseball world. But we're going back into the world of basketball next podcast. So enjoy, and we'll talk to you then.
My name is Jared Holden, and you are listening to Taking the Charge.